Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Star Wars, The Bad Batch, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow elite clone trooper, Tony Sindelar. Hi, Tony.
Reporting for duty, sir.
Oh, this Hello, is nerds. The I could get used to this kind of discipline.
Oh wait, I'm part of Clone Trooper 99. I don't care about your orders. I get the job done. Get out of my way.
Oh man,
short-lived. Oh,
this was, went downhill quickly. I was just thinking compared to all the other shows I do, in which there is no discipline.
Yep, there's always a hill, and we're either going up it or down it. That's
or,
how we do it.
Or gonna die on it. That's our option.
Yep.
It's one of those. Mm-hmm. We're here to discuss a Bad Batch episode 8 entitled Reunion, in which there is, in fact, a reunion. But Tony is going to recap that for us, and then we'll do a little chat.
All right. Episode 8, Reunion. We are picking up right where the previous episode left off. The Bad Batch are on Bracca, the... I want to call it a garbage planet, but the shipbreaker planet.
It's a garbage planet.
Full of wreckage from the war. The Scrapper Guild has notified the Empire that there's clones here. So we go to Kamino, which we had not seen in quite a while, and we see Crosshair. We see the Kamino scientist, whose name I don't remember, and we have one line of dialogue from Imperial Admiral Rampart, who basically gives the termination order for the Bad Batch. So Crosshair is going to go to Bracca and deal with that. Back on Bracca, Wrecker is teaching Omega explosive disarmament using an unorthodox teaching method. Omega fails to disarm the explosive, but thankfully it was not a real big explosive, just a little explosive. The Wrecker and Echo realize that they are being observed by the Scrappers. There's a fight and kind of a chase sequence as Wrecker is clinging to it's not a speeder, but like a skimmer vehicle.
Skiff, I think,
thing.
Yeah.
Skiff, yeah. And so they realize that they should probably not hang around here too long. They then hang out here too long because they also realize that they could get some intelligence from the bridge and munitions from the cruiser to settle off their debt. This was one of several things in the episode that felt like people made choices for the purposes of plot and not necessarily the best choices they could have made. There's discussion of what is the Bad Batch path? Are we arms dealers? Are we soldiers? What are we doing in this life? They dawdle for far too long, such that the Empire shows up. Crosshair has a big batch of seems like troopers, including some black armored, perhaps death troopers. We cut to Kamino, where the Kaminoans are being shady. We have a little meeting between the head scientist and the head politician, and they discuss their contingency, and they make it clear here that they are fixated on Omega and for their future shadowy, spooky plans. Back on Bracca, there's ongoing traps and contingencies with Crosshair tracking them throughout the wreck of the battleship. They hack the comms, but of course Crosshair knew they would hack the comms, so he uses that as a trap. They end up in a big artillery bay. There's a very slow standoff, considering that I think Crosshair was ordered to kill them. Echo does a diversion. There's chaos. There's more running around in the dark and people shooting each other. They are trying to escape through the cruiser engines, and Crosshair has had one of his lieutenants activate the cruiser engines to burn them out, and the Bad Batch uses explosives to remove the shielding so that somehow they're safe, and Crosshair gets burnt by the own thing he was going to use to burn them, and it's all very dramatic and explosive-y, and Hunter and Omega get back to their shuttle, and we have a clip where it looks like Bad Batch have taken out Crosshair's minions, but actually someone else has taken out the minions and is waiting for Omega and Hunter, and it is a surprise reveal of a beloved, at least reoccurring Clone Wars character, Cad Bane, Wild West style standoff. Cad Bane shoots Hunter, stuns Omega, and runs away. POV shot of Hunter waking up, being dragged into the shuttle, and the Bad Batch knows that they need to go and get Omega from wherever Cad Bane has taken her.
So, well, I thought what was interesting about this was they've amped up the sort of continuity, right? Like, this week's episode starts off basically right after last week's episode ended, and we are clearly going immediately into whatever next week's episode is, or at least presumably, I suppose. I would hope they don't dawdle too much, but they, you know, if they don't know who hired the bounty hunter, and I can understand why, taking a step back, it is very obvious to us as viewers of the show who hired the bounty hunter. I could understand why it might be a little more mysterious to them, because yes, they don't necessarily have a reason to suspect the Kaminoans.
Yeah, I don't know if they know anything about the Kaminoans or the breakdown in the arms deal between the Kaminoans and the Empire. So they are very used to the idea that, like, we're being hunted by the Empire because there's not supposed to be rogue clones wandering around and we're on the lam. And now there's somebody who's killing the people sent to kill us to steal.
Exactly.
Omega, that's confusing. If you don't get to see the scenes that we're not in,
whoa. Why, this show is about us. Why are there scenes that we're not in?
Yeah, what's going on? So we get Cad Bane. I feel like that's worth mentioning. Maybe not the focus of this episode, only appears in the last couple minutes. Cad Bane, for folks who haven't watched The Clone Wars, is a reoccurring bounty hunter. He's a Duros. He's blue with big red eyes. I believe he is inspired by a specific Clint Eastwood character. I'm not sure which one. I'm not super up on Westerns, but he is a very... There's a series of bounty hunter-themed episodes in The Clone Wars that are very much pastiches of classic Westerns, and down to Cad Bane being a Western character inserted into Star Wars universe. He wears a cowboy style hat. He carries his guns in holsters. He has a little droid sidekick a lot of the times, because other people that team up with Cad Bane seem to die pretty quickly. And this is, I guess, we see that Dave Filoni loves his characters that he created for Clone Wars, keeps bringing them back. I don't know, especially we had some before, I don't know how confusing or disorienting this is to people who are watching Bad Batch without having seen Clone Wars. This is one of those episodes that feels like this could have just been part of the, like, last season of Clone Wars, whereas others feel a little bit more standalone. I enjoyed Cad Bane. I mean, I think he's ridiculous because he's a space cowboy.
He's kind of one note. I mean, he's not a character with a lot of complexity. Like, he's not, like, he doesn't have a lot of there's not a lot of nuance to that character. No. There are some episodes that delve a little bit more into his personality and his relationship with, like, colleagues and whatever, but, like, he's also a character who is not really a, you know, we have bounty hunters that we feel like, oh, are they good? Are they bad? Like, you know, that they play in the gray, right? And, like, Cad Bane is definitely a villain. Yes. I don't think there's really any question about
literally
that.
Literally, his name is Cad and Bane put together. He's one step up from Sleazebagio. And he's your classic. He's just in it for the money. He does not care about hurting anyone or hurting anything that gets him to money. Even in the episodes, he's basically, I agree with you, Dan, the more interesting depictions of Cad Bane is when he's bouncing off of other bounty hunters and has to, like, work with them and do kind of cool, sneaky things with them. But as a character, he's not very interesting. He has a job to complete. He wants money. And there's nothing kind of even very, you know, he's not hiding behind a mask. There's nothing kind of secret to him. He is just a mercenary. I think, and basically, whether Cad Bane lands with you or not is, do you find amusement in the kind of Western pastiche, or do you find that annoying and distracting?
Apparently largely inspired by Lee Van Cleef. From classic, from the Fistful of Dollars trilogy. He appears in two separate roles in two of those movies, but particularly Angel Eyes in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Apparently, there is a decent amount of George Lucas inspiration in this, including potentially Cad Bane, the name, which is, like, that's a very George Lucas name, so I would believe that entirely.
Yeah.
He's entertaining. He has a certain, like, you know, I think there is some entertainment to him as a character who appears as sort of a thorn in the side of our heroes. He notably had a lot of back and forth with Obi-Wan in Clone Wars. But I think he is not a character that, you know, he's a bad guy. He is just straight up a bad guy, and there's really no way to beat around the bush on that. But it will be interesting potentially to see how he interacts with, you know, some of the other characters that we have established in this series so far.
I did wonder a little bit, like, why another bounty hunter, right? Like, why I thought we were going to see Fennec Shand again. So
yeah,
It seems like there's a lot of bounty hunters out there, or at least they have employed multiple bounty hunters to bring back Omega.
Yeah, I think they decided they were desperate at that point, according to the sort of the conversation they're having, because of the fact that, like, essentially, if Clone Force 99 is killed, then the Kaminoans lose their, you know, shadowy agenda plan, right? So they had to act more. Probably means they just had, you know, they had to upgrade, right? They got a bargain basement bounty hunter in Fennec Shand, who's new and starting out. And then they decided, well, you know, this isn't cutting it. We got to go up a rung and get our more, you know, professional level bounty hunter. And I thought there was, when they mentioned that, it was like, well, Cad Bane is at the top of that list. I don't think it would be Boba Fett in this particular era. He's still
pretty young.
He's pretty young and he's not super established.
Remember, there's a whole crew of bounty hunters.
I thought the only other one who came to mind was Embo, who I love, who has a hat and a dog.
Is Embo a robot?
He's an alien of some kind,
but he's got a kind of robotic face mask.
Yeah,
he's got glowing eyes peeking out from under his hat. I forget of the kind of big gang that interacts with Cad Bane and Boba Fett. They appear in a couple Clone Wars episodes that are pretty good. I forget which ones are alive and dead at the end of Clone Wars, because some of them don't make it. I'm interested to hear kind of how this episode lands with people who are unfamiliar with Cad Bane and how that appearance of him, like, does that work if you don't know who he is and think that's cool, or is it just confusing and annoying?
He's pretty clearly identified as a bounty hunter, which I think is, you know, and we know there's bounty hunters are looking for Omega, so it kind of makes sense. I feel like it probably works, but yeah, as usual, if you've watched Clone Wars, you probably get a little bit more out of it.
Well, I don't think Cad Bane was supposed to be the focus of this episode, because the episode is reunion, so I guess it's all about Crosshair and the group crossing paths again. I do feel like the Bad Batch hung out way too long at this site once they knew that their cover was blown for lack of letter, given that basically, like, many other, like, every other person, every faction in the galaxy sends someone here to
sure,
to deal
that's
with
fair
them.
Point. I think they probably assumed, I guess my reading of it was like, look, A, this is our opportunity to, like, get out from under the debt to Sid, and to potentially make some money, which we need. And B, I think they probably didn't immediately suspect maybe that the scrappers had notified the Empire, right? Like, they were thinking, like, oh, scrappers, you know, that'd be annoying, but we can kind of handle them. We've got enough time to strip this cruiser. But, like, yeah, the Empire, and especially Crosshair having their sort of axe to grind and showing up quickly, definitely threw a wrench in those plans. I do think they spend way too long, like, and I mean, granted, every, Tony, you will admit, every D&D party in the world does this. It's like, we've got our haul. We're going to do everything possible not to lose all this money that we almost have.
Give you guys a big barrel of money to roll across the desert.
And I liked a lot of that. I mean, there's a bit, you know, there's a couple really good gags in the fight, I thought. The when they fire the turbo lasers and, like, Crosshair is in the middle of, like, a speech and gets, like, knocked over. And I thought that was good. And then when Wrecker throws a torpedo at a guy, which is also a pretty good shot. Although, you know, maybe that's why you don't use a flamethrower. You just use a gun is all I'm saying. They did not have a reappearance. I was a little surprised. We joked last week about the Dianoga making an appearance.
Yeah. And they got a
they
line
mentioned
in this.
It.
And that's like, you know, they're gonna, you know, somehow dispatch a group of clones who are not gonna want to follow them in, or gonna, or follow them into a dangerous corridor or something. And surprising. I think it was just the combination of, you should leave this planet now, and then when Crosshair catches up with them, and, like, there's a lengthy standoff where Tech suggests to Echo to hack the guns, and he has time to hack the guns while they're standing there pointing guns at people. And it's like, you should. But I guess Crosshair is he's one of those bad guys who has to make the speech or
he's
wants to bring them in alive.
Yeah.
But it's like, your orders were terminate them. You have you've taken way too long here.
And this is where we get into an interesting dilemma too, right? Because they try to, you know, tell Crosshair about the inhibitor chip and everything, and he does not really seem to care about that.
Yes.
And in fact, at one point, he's like, basically, you know, he tells them, the troopers, to shoot Omega, right? Which is also kind of dark, right? Like, yeah, shoot the kid, you know. It's like, Jesus, like, come on. We have a moment there where Omega tries to get through to him based on the conversation they had in the brig back in episode one about it sort of not being his fault, right? Like, he's gonna do stuff. And that was, we had that moment as sort of like a weird, there was like a, you know, we haven't discussed Omega in a while in terms of why she is so special and why she's so interesting to the Kaminoans, as well as what traits she might have. But that was one of the big clues that suggested maybe she's Force-sensitive, was that she seemed to sort of pick up what he was thinking in that moment, but maybe just isn't really aware of it, and it's not like there's anybody around to tell her, like... how that works.
Yeah, I mean, the question remains unresolved. Is Crosshair evil because there's a chip in his head, or is he just a bad dude?
Kind of jerk. Yeah. One of our listeners suggested that, like, the one way this might play out is they eventually take his chip out and he still sides with the Empire, which I think is very likely. Like, that strikes me as the kind of message they want to put across here, is like, some people just choose to go a different way, right? And and there's conflict here too, right? Because we have a scene where Echo is talking to Hunter about basically saying we should have gone with Rex, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, especially Echo has a close tie to Rex. Again, for people who aren't familiar with the Clone Wars stuff, those two characters go back a ways and have served together a bunch.
They don't really get the scenes together that you would expect for that, right?
Right, right.
That's kind of I am noticing now a deficiency in the previous episode that, like, they were good buddies and Rex, like, super risked his life to go and bring Echo back. And, I don't think they ever get a one-on-one conversation.
Right, there is a little bit there where they have a conversation about the chip. And he mentions that Fives tried to warn him and he didn't believe him, which is, again, an allusion to the Clone Wars arc that deals with the introduction of the inhibitor chip. We don't get as much of that. And I feel confident we haven't seen the last of Rex, you know, in this season, not least of all because I'm pretty sure they can get the voice actor back.
Yeah, it's very available.
Very available. I liked a couple of the other things here. I enjoyed the whole thing with the engine. I mean, it was kind of a wild plan, but I enjoy how ridiculous it was.
I got a little disoriented as to where are they going such that the engine doesn't hurt them and the explosion they're setting off doesn't hurt them. I think I got a little kind of disoriented as to that. But then I got the idea that they were separated. That seemed... because the premise is basically they blew off the shielding.
Like the cone at the back.
The cone around it. And they're both on pieces of the cone that kind of fell to different parts.
Right.
And then without the cone, I guess I was a little confused the geometry of how Crosshair gets burned in the face and they didn't get burned in the face. Didn't totally land for me.
They talk a little bit, like, Tech has this, there's a scene where Tech is like, this stuff can withstand, like, like huge stuff, and then Wrecker's like, whatever, nerd, shut up, nerd.
Shut up, nerd. Shut up, nerd, that line of dialogue won't be relevant later.
Yeah, there are a couple good lines about it, a lot of lines involving Tech, like that one, you know, where he's starting to explain, and Wrecker's like, no one cares. There's one where Omega asks him about the war, and he's like, it was a strategic mission
with
series of events. And she's like, no, but what was it like? He's like, I just told you this. And then the one that made me laugh, surprising even me, was where Omega is wandering through and says, I've never been inside an ion engine before. Yeah. And Wrecker's like, it'd be weirder if you had, right? Yeah. Like, I thought that was a pretty good line. I thought there was some decent writing in this episode. I thought there was a lot of fun, like, you know, they're on their back heels for a lot of it, which I think is, it's tense to watch parts of that because you really didn't know how it was going to shake out. There's some good shots here. Like, there's one shot where they try to call, Crosshair's team tries to call the clones, like, watching the Bad Batch's ship, and it starts in on, like, a clone helmet and then rotates, and you see that, like, they've been knocked out. That was a cool shot. And then there's that POV shot with Hunter at the end, too, which is also...
And, I love the shot. They have several kind of establishing shots of Bracca that look like they're painted or something. I mean, this particular setting is very evocative. And even just, I've been rewatching Rebels, just the scenes of them, like, moving through the ship and the decks are all tilted and, like, some of the lights are still working and there's trash and scrap and rust everywhere. It's that way of being like, we are in a Star Wars setting that you have not seen exactly before, but feels very much like a Star Wars setting.
They definitely captured a lot of that with the animation, the lighting. I think a lot of even the sound design work is really solid in this episode. Technically, it kind of feels like it's hitting all its marks. And, you know, I think, again, roughly halfway through the season, it does seem like we have spent enough time establishing Omega as part of the team that having this moment, which I think we all kind of anticipated would happen sooner or later, where she is kidnapped or taken, feels like, you know, we understand why they're all so motivated, so motivated to go after her. And it gives a more, clear and present danger kind of thing, right? Where it's like, okay, we're not meandering anymore, trying to figure out where's our place in the world. We now have a job, and that job is to rescue someone. And it also gives me hope that this is like a case where this is the kind of thing that maybe you would have called them in for back when the Republic was still a going concern. Like, oh, we have this impossible mission. Let us call in our elite troopers who are unorthodox but get results. So maybe this is kind of in their wheelhouse now.
Well, I'm interested to see where they go next and what happens. Do they come face to face with some of the Kaminoans? We've got Crosshair wandering around, who now looks like he perhaps battle scarred Crosshair in the ways that perhaps seems like somebody might be even angrier and hungrier for vengeance and more willing to do reckless things to get to even the score. Seems like what happens when you injure a bad guy.
And we have a lot of things still floating around out there, right? I mean, obviously we introduced Cad Bane, but we still have potentially Fennec Shan sitting out there. We have Rampart and the Imperials. The Kaminoans have arranged for Omega to be apprehended, but presumably they don't want the Empire to know this. So how they're going to maneuver that is an interesting question as well. How do these differing agendas sort of come into play, and what exactly is their plan here to remain relevant, apparently, in this, like, with their concerns about the conscripts coming in?
Yeah.
Also, I really want to know what Plan 7 was. That's what I want to know.
It's not relevant here, Dan. Nothing about
That's
it.
That's a good suggestion.
I was watching with captions, and some of Crosshair's team gets numbers and in the captions. So we have some reoccurring thing, but we haven't really established any of them as characters. I don't know if that will come back.
Because there were conscripts
there, but probably also clones still, because he had backup.
Well, a lot of the mostly clones, as far as I can tell, there are still only three basically non-clone troopers. They're the ones that wear the dark armor.
Yeah,
and you can tell from their voices, right?
Because their voices are different. Yes, they're clearly not D. Bradley Baker. So interesting. We'll be watching to see if anything with that happens. Also watching, and I couldn't really tell, have we seen any evolution of the armor? Were the clones still just in generic clone armor?
They still seem to be in clone armor. I mean, it takes a long time to spin up the production lines for Stormtrooper.
And I wasn't sure, they had no coloring on them, right? So they didn't have any blue or yellow or orange. I know there are clone troopers that are just in all white with black bits. But I was like, are they getting, in any ways, there's a design shift toward something halfway towards Stormtrooper? But I didn't see it. But I am watching for that.
Yeah. I kind of think that's going to be towards the end of this season is my guess. I think that we might see the Stormtrooper sort of get introduced because it seems like kind of the thing where, you know, that's sort of a big deal, right? Like, this is currently hanging in the balance, right? Like, we don't know what the future of the clones are. The Kaminoans are vying to have a future for the clones in the Empire. And obviously, Rampart is very much on the other side of the fence and thinks that they should be just, you know, continuing to conscript people, and then maybe it's cheaper, etc. So I think that's something that
we don't know how much it costs. Conscripting and training people is very expensive, but perhaps cloning people is 10 times more expensive than that.
We have no first-hand clone knowledge.
No, we have very little first-hand clone knowledge, and they do still train the clones, so they're like, they have innate aptitude, but they still have to put them through their training academies. I assume Stormtroopers are not well paid.
Obviously we've spoken positively about him many times, but mentioning D. Bradley Baker, I thought once again in this episode how amazingly he differentiates all these voices while still having them be recognizably kind of the same person, like walking that line of, you know, I can tell when Echo is saying something. And you know, even Echo, who is arguably sort of the most quote-unquote normal of the batch, His voice is very distinct from even someone like Hunter, who is kind of the next closest, right? And like, I think then Crosshair and Tech and Wrecker all have their own very distinct voices. And I think that's, it's, he does an amazing job.
Yeah. We hadn't heard Crosshair in a while, and Crosshair, I mean, even when Crosshair was nominally a good guy, Crosshair has a very villain-coded voice.
Yes.
So, you know.
Sounds very nefarious.
Yeah.
All right, anything else before we wrap up here?
I don't think so. I'm interested to see what planet they end up on next. You know, a lot of trash on Braca. Again, made me wonder how much time has passed that there's ships that are full of wreckage and rust and stuff. But I guess the war did last a while, so maybe that ship was not from the last battle of the war. But a lot of garbage from that war. So.
Yeah, right. What was the war like? It generated a lot of trash. I think that's what you take away from it.
A lot of trash.
Of scrap. All right, well, we will be back, of course, next week to discuss episode 9 of The Bad Batch. And as always, I would like to thank my co-host, Tony Sindelar, for being here.
Goodbye, nerds.
And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you next week.